Hello and welcome to the Beautiful Business Podcast, where today Paul and I will be looking back through the season so far and reflecting on some of our best learning moments. Hopefully, you'll agree that we've had an incredible range of guests so far this season. We've talked about everything, covering sales, culture, organisational structures. We've even had Olympic athletes, strategists who can translate that into leadership. It has been such a broad range, and we are really excited to dive in and think back to the people that we've been speaking to. Welcome to the Beautiful Business Podcast from The Wow Company. If you're growing a UK business with a team of 8 to 80 people, you're in the right place. Every fortnight, we share honest conversations with brilliant business minds, exploring the realities of leadership, the challenges that come with growth, and the practical ideas that make a real difference. From purpose to profit, people to process, this is your space for fresh thinking and down-to-earth inspiration.
Chloe, what a great season we've had.
It's actually been, I think it's been really varied, like, as we'll see when we go through this, but...
Yeah, a diverse range of guests.
Yeah, I've learned so much.
So we've had like Olympic rowers, business leaders, like really heavy hitting business leaders.
Yeah.
And everyone, there's just been a moment, every single one, there's been a moment. I thought, oh, wow, that's such a good point.
I know. I feel so lucky that we get to speak to these people and just extract as much knowledge as we possibly can. One of my favorite moments. It's hard, right? I'm going to keep saying one of my favorite moments because I've got so many. But I really enjoyed speaking with Mo Kanjalau from Watch This Space about DE&I. I don't know, maybe this is me, but it feels like a bit of an unexplored area. Not completely unexplored, but like, you know, something that we don't really talk too much about. And we've got maybe some legislations in place and blah, 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 and some box ticking stuff. And actually, like, to understand the value of it from a commercial impact and, you know, all of the different areas of DE&I as well. Like, Mo taught me so much, everything down to accent comes under DE&I. And
beyond like the box ticking bit, right?
Absolutely, yeah. And just, I don't know if you remember this, but like back in one of our, I think it was at the Bench Press Live panel, Mo talked about how Apple ran loads of tests for one of their mobile phones. And actually, when they brought it out, they realized that it was too big for women's hands. They just hadn't tested it, I guess, with enough women to say, okay, this doesn't suit the size of a woman's hand. And you think, my gosh, that's like so basic, isn't it? And such a big company to not hit that spot. I've been on a little bit of an obsessive lookout since talking with Mo, just about like little markers of inclusivity, I guess, within the workplace, but also just within general environments. I think it started a little bit of an obsession for me, for sure.
did you have a favorite sort of like favorite moment in that episode?
A really touching point was when we talked about how leaders can find their blind spots, because I think we can agree, right? Like, leaders oftentimes are just trying so hard to get through the day and, you know, trying to keep everyone happy and be strategic and do all of these, have all of these incredible responsibilities. How do they know where they're not hitting the spot? And Mo talked, she talked a lot about listening, actually. She talked about a lot about getting feedback and listening. And I think she said something about, 60, if you've put out a survey and 60% of people come back, like, what's happened to the 40%? Where are they? Why have they not said anything? Like, what's the reason? And kind of doing that digging and honing in on when and where and why you're not getting bits of feedback.
Should we listen to a clip?
When we do our work with organizations, we always say, you know, if you get 60% replying to something, to a survey, something like that, actually, what's interesting is the 40% that didn't respond. Why did they feel like this wasn't something to respond to? That's really what we need to look at. So it is about really listening and hearing what people are saying and knowing that as a leader, you don't have all the answers.
So, you know, those people that might not have filled in the survey or might have had the opportunity to use their voice in that way, I'm most interested in how we create this kind of culture of inclusion that doesn't just sit with HR and it doesn't just sit with the leaders, but is actually, and obviously there is something in there around what you've already said about creating a culture where we can talk and we can have these conversations, but it's important, right, to have it through running through the whole business and not just the leaders and the HR and the executives and all the rest.
Yeah, so it's actually even more important that employees feel like this is a priority and it's something that's being worked on, being heard, because again, there are sometimes we start to work with an organisation and when we get the feedback, it's sometimes quite difficult for leaders to hear that somebody in their organisation says these things, says, you know, I don't feel like I'm listened to, I don't feel like it's inclusive. For a leader who thinks they're doing things on inclusion, we've seen that quite a lot, particularly it can happen in larger organisations where at the top, the leadership team feel like, oh yeah, we're doing these things, we're offering this, we're offering perhaps well-being support, or we're offering this and we're offering that, but actually employees don't know anything about it. That happened so many times when we've worked with people where actually what it feels like to work there is quite different. So leaders have to listen to that feedback, which can be quite hard. We've had some that we've worked with, I'll be honest, where they haven't liked the feedback and they've stepped back from the work.
I just loved talking to Mo, and I'm so grateful that she came on. I literally could have talked to her all day about that stuff. But speaking about talking about stuff all day, Paul, we had one guest that you would not stop talking about once you came out of your recording. And that was Tim Foster. Do you want to talk to us a little bit about him? And remember that we've got a time limit, actually.
So what our viewers and listeners won't appreciate is the Tim Foster episode. Him and I talked for over 2 hours. So the poor editors had to cut out an awful lot of chat to get a sensible podcast episode out of it.
Poor editors, but Tim must have been like, is this going to end anytime soon?
Now I'm really embarrassed. I didn't clear that bit. We just talked, and like they say, like, don't meet your heroes. But I remember watching like Tim Foster rowing in the Sydney Olympics. I remember that boat. I remember the hype about it. And then to meet him in person, he was such a lovely, generous, insightful guy. I wanted to know about his boat with Steve Redgrave, Matthew Pinson, James Cracknell, and their journey to Olympic gold, because it wasn't necessarily conventional. I wanted to know about his coach, Jürgen Gröbe, who had this like crazy, crazy success. But then the other bit that maybe I didn't appreciate was just how easily that translated into business. So Tim works with businesses now, Tim works with the Football League Managers Association, and how we're able to take so many of those examples of like the elite sports environment into a work environment. We talk a lot about WOW, about building high performing teams, and I just took so much. I really hope our listeners did as well. Was there anything that stood out from that episode for you, Chloe?
No, I think you're absolutely right. And I think you definitely touched on it there. There was a lot, to be fair. I do tease you a bit, but there was so much in there that was just so valuable. And I think you're absolutely right. I didn't quite know how it was going to translate across. I mean, I know obviously Tim is, you know, he does lots of talks now about all of this stuff and he's fascinating to listen to. But you're right. It's just the premise of it being the same between the sporting world and actually the business world. It was a really fascinating listen. What was one key thing then, Paul, if I can ask you one key thing, that you kind of took away and really learnt from Tim?
Probably it all comes back to, so Tim told this story about how he'd called out Sir Steve Redgrave, the senior guy, senior rower in their boat. And I'm like, well, you're the most junior member of the team. What enabled that to happen? Because clearly it was a good thing. It needed to happen. But what was it? How did that happen? And the thing that we talked about was the importance of having this foundational layer of trust. How in any high performing team, there needs to be a foundational level of trust. And that for me was a real aha moment. One thing that didn't make it to the final cut of the episode was we were talking about our kids' sports. So, Tim's daughter's a rower, my daughters play cricket, and I talked about the girls' cricket coach, and they've got this cricket coach who's just an amazing woman, very calm, But she's created this culture of trust within the girls that she gets them to do anything. They'll do anything for them. And just kind of seeing that, listening to Tim and then thinking about our business, our businesses, and just how simple, but how foundational, how important that layer of trust is.
Yeah, such incredible advice. Yeah, should we take a look?
When we lose in what was the World Cup final in 2000, 6 weeks before the Olympics, having lost, we had this meeting where everyone tried to individually take responsibility, and that was necessary. Jürgen, as the leader, said it was his fault, which was true, but not the whole truth. I had probably let us down, and that quality hadn't been as good as it should be, and the quality was very much in my remit of so we'd all tried to take individual responsibility, but then actually the second half of the meeting was actually we had to criticize each other, and I had to tell who at the time were our only reigning Olympic champions that they were being a bit unprofessional, that actually they were overweight, that actually I have no power in the game. Like, I'm a member of the team, and actually you could probably argue in a lot of people's eyes, sort of lesser member of the team. Yet actually I'm proposing that there's something that they've just not addressed that they really need to address that will help us win. And what was interesting was looking at it now is it could have gone very wrong, but I didn't consider that at the time, because actually to me the environment's there that I can say this, that actually I can accuse them of being overweight and therefore we need to lose weight. And actually for them it was something that they genuinely hadn't thought of, because bigger is better in other things being equal. The bigger and stronger you are, the faster you'll go. But what I was introducing was a concept of, well, actually the boat sits a bit deeper in the water too. So if we can be as powerful and be lighter, then we'll go faster. So actually it wasn't a conversation they wanted to have, but we were able to have it. And by the time we left the room, the agreement was that they would lose weight. And they do, actually. They lose quite a bit of weight, as it turns out. And actually, taking it back into that sort of business context, there's no way we could have had that conversation if it was up here as a really high level of conflict. If we'd never had conflict before, it was probably the highest example that I could think of in our journey, but it was just a small step and a necessary step compared to what we were actually doing in terms of our environment and our culture during sort of every other day.
That was just a great episode, and I really hope everyone listening enjoyed that one. And if you didn't catch that first time around, please go back and listen to it, because it was just absolutely jam-packed full of gems. But the idea of trust, Chloe, kind of brings me on to a more recent episode with Dr. John Finn, where we talked about AI proofing our teams. And he made another really interesting point about trust.
Okay. Well, I've not, just while we're recording this, right, I've not heard this yet. So for me, I'm very excited to hear. Go on, tell me what he said.
We also talked about trust in relation to AI. And what Dr. John Finn's interesting observation was that where within teams where people feel threatened by AI, feels that AI might be taking their jobs, actually that's eroding trust. And actually, so think back to Tim Foster's point that trust is a foundational layer of high-performing teams, where AI is actually eroding that trust and therefore eroding sort of like performance levels as well. Which I've not really thought about, but makes complete sense.
It makes absolute sense, doesn't it? I actually know somebody who works, so they work within an industry where they are phoning out. And they recently, it just reminded me, they recently got an email from their business, the business that they work for, to say, we're trialing AI doing some of these calls. Don't worry. You're not losing your jobs. It's not going to replace you. But we just want to see how effective it is and how people respond to talking to, you know, essentially a robot. And even though I think they, as a business, they did a really great thing, right? By at least letting people know and trying to let them know that it's okay. Don't worry about it. I know for a fact that the person that works there was immediately like, oh, they say don't worry about it, but what if? And it's so true, isn't it? No matter how much you might reassure or console, like with this threat of AI coming in and potentially doing all these jobs that are too easy for us humans to do, I can't help but wonder, you know, what's going to happen to everyone that enjoy doing those jobs or that perhaps have the skill set for those jobs and, you know, are now potentially going to be forced into trying to find something else instead. Yeah, that is so interesting, Paul.
In the episode with John Finn, we talked about this scenario exactly. So he was telling me that in some of the big Indian centers like Bangalore, they've got thousands of people unemployed because AI is just taking out this layer of, not necessarily jobs, but this layer of roles. What he's advocating for is that within our businesses, our teams, that we AI proof ourselves. And his thing is to make sure that all of that work we do that AI can do, well, just let AI do it, right? But we need to be gearing ourselves up to do the higher, more brain power, more involved, more creative work. And that's kind of a challenge for each of us individually. I think there's a clip relating to this that we can listen to now.
We can create the future, but we can only create the future if we're elite cognitive performers. And I think broadly speaking, there'll be three core roles that emerge. One is the innovators, those who spend all day long creating the future. How do we build buildings that absorb carbon dioxide instead of emitting it? How do we create an education system so every child has a world-class education and is absolutely ready as a wholly developed human being to thrive as an adult? How do we create a healthcare service, you know, where everybody gets everything they need? So they'll be the innovators. Then there'll be the automators. They'll be working out, well, how do we build the solutions to deliver on that, both the software and the hardware? Because we're not even seeing the robotic AI yet. I mean, Amazon actually have big percentages of their warehouse workforce and are robotics, right? They don't put press releases out about that because it's quite scary. People have seen the Terminator, but that's happening. We're already seeing that in the wars, you know, drones, etc. Massive part. And then, so we'll have the innovators, the automators, and then we'll have the AI-proof coaches, the people that will be working. We call them human AI performance psychology coaches. They'll be working with the innovators and the automators to make sure that they can keep getting into those high-charged brain states so they stay valuable. And we can go faster with the AI.
Let's say that you're running an accounting firm right now. What do you do? Where do you start?
Retrain your brain for that AI revolution. The first thing I actually share with leaders is on our website, in the business section, we've just put there's a chapter in the book at the back end of the book, which is about scaling and creating brain state intelligent cultures. So you can just listen to that on our website. It's about 15 minutes. Because you want to think about this as across the team, the organization, but also you want to read the book because you want to understand this yourself first, like you have. So it's there. That's why we wrote the book, because we want to give people that step-by-step, science-based, but simple, practical guide. And I'm referring to my book because no one else is even talking about this yet.
No,
we've got American companies lining up who want our IP because they're seeing this is the gap. There's been the race ahead with building the tech and introducing the tech into businesses, but no one's thought about humans. And, you know, we're making this transition from human teams to human AI teams, smaller teams of humans working with AI. People are planning for these transitions. And I'll tell you why it needs to be org charted, because I already know people who've been told, you're not getting a graduate for that role. You'll be using AI to fill the hole. But with the AI, you can communicate with it like you communicate with a graduate, right? You're going to have to learn how to get it working properly in your team. So it's not just like plug and play. These tools, we're going to be co-working with them. We're going to be checking their work sometimes. But yeah, absolutely. So if you go onto a website called something like AIagents.com, you know, there are thousands of agentic AI for thousands of different jobs in your business. They already exist. you know, in sales and marketing, they're really ahead here. So there's bots are phoning people up and speaking to them. And the voice cloning technology now is as good as the sort of the copywriting, to the extent that Disney are starting to sue out there one of the companies because you can hear, you know, you could do like a Mickey Mouse voice or something if you wanted to, and it sounds like Mickey Mouse. So this tech's already here. One of my clients, they say that by the end of the year in America, in the US, there will be no human receptionists in car dealerships anymore. They will all be bots. So yeah, so it's working out. Well, where can we outsource? A bit like we used to outsource things overseas. Where can we outsource these tasks? So it's the role versus the task. So every role is made up of tasks. Which tasks can we outsource to AI? Which tasks can we use AI to help us to go faster? But I think the forward-thinking businesses won't be really laying people off. They'll be saying, right, how do we redeploy people so we can go faster? But people can't help you go faster if they're not elite cognitive performers.
That is genuinely fascinating. Moving on, because we've got a few to get through. Melanie Wendland from Sonder Collective was another incredible episode to record for us, wasn't it? I mean, it was one of, I think it's the only one that we've actually done together. And a fun fact, I guess, for anyone that might have listened to that episode or is going to listen to it, is that behind the scenes for a short period of time, Paul actually couldn't hear what I was asking, could you? I think I could hear you, but you couldn't hear me.
I had to kind of guess what was going on from what Melanie said. So listening to her answers to your question, I couldn't hear your questions, but I could hear her answers.
If that isn't a test of active listening, then I just don't know what is, to be honest. But, you know, I think it turned out absolutely great. And Melanie's kind of outlook on stuff really taught me a lot of that episode. Is there anything that that you took away from that, Paul?
Melanie was fascinating because, number one, that the work she does is phenomenal. She talked to us about work she does with women in the Global South and how they gather feedback and insights. Absolutely fascinating. But also the other bit for me was, we talk a lot about self-managed teams, decentralized organizations, and here Melanie is running a decentralized organization. So for me, it was a bit like finding this like rare species and just like, well, how does that work? And how do you organize pay, and how do you make decisions, and how do you do this? And actually that in itself was just really interesting, going through like a bunch of scenarios and learning about how a real life, fully decentralized organization works in practice.
Yeah, it was so interesting actually, because I definitely went into that episode with my own understanding, or lack of understanding, I should maybe say, of what a decentralized organization would actually run like. And I think Melanie really helped kind of put to bed some of the things that I just assumed might happen in an organization like that. I sort of thought it would be a bit more of a free-for-all than what it maybe was. Like there's quite a lot of structure, isn't there?
If you don't mind me saying, I think we went into that episode, I was definitely, I love the idea of decentralized organizations and I want to learn more. And I think you were going into it thinking
the opposite.
Yeah, no.
Absolutely. Yeah,
this doesn't work. This cannot work. Come on, tell me about it. Yeah. And I think actually we both took different bits from it, coming from different perspectives.
I've got this belief, I guess, that humans want to be led. As humans, like, we kind of naturally want to fall into, you know, a role, and some people fall into that leadership role and some people fall into that more following role, right? And I don't think that one's better than the other. I think it's just a natural sort of fall. So the idea of running a whole organization without clear leaders and, you know, and employees just absolutely blew my mind. But I think, like I say, one of the things that I really took away was that there was, despite it being decentralized, it was actually, it is very structured, and there is a lot of process, I guess, around how they really do it. So I think one of the things you asked was about self-management being a challenge? Is it a challenge within the organization? And I thought Melanie's answer was fascinating. She talked about how it is a challenge, but you have to manage the process and not the people.
And I think going back to your earlier point, you know, people do want to be led, but no one really wants to be managed. And it's actually, it's not the leadership. We're not talking about necessarily self-led teams. We're talking about self-managed teams.
Yeah,
so there's always a place for leadership. It's really like the management and the empowerment and the opportunity to do things how you see fit.
Shall we take a look at when Melanie was talking about managing the process and not the person?
Yeah, let's do that.
Let's say that we want to do more marketing and we need a new person to, you know, run our marketing. We have a system that we call Holacracies. That's a Holacracy. That's an operating system for self-management. And so through this system, we have a governance process. So whenever something needs to be changed in the organization, a proposal needs to be made by whoever feels like this is a good proposal, creates a proposal. It's being shared in a governance meeting with the other members, and then questions can be asked. The proposal can be refined. And then in the end is a decision-making process whether the proposal will be accepted and implemented or it needs to be further refined. And the decision-making process works in a way that we're not kind of trying to get like the most votes, but if there's no objections, it goes according to the good enough to try. So if everybody says that, you know, it might not be, you know, the best decision, but it's good enough to try, there's no risks involved in trying this, we'll go forward with the decision. And that's how we usually make decisions.
Because I'm just imagining lots of kind of freelancers, perhaps with their own ideas and things, and then just actually coming together, how that centralizes.
We kind of differentiate between, you know, there's things that pertain to the organization, such as finance management, operations, marketing, and that's governed through the governance process with the members. But on projects, the project lead is usually the authority to kind of make decisions. But we try to be still also on the project side very inclusive. When, you know, project lead doesn't go ahead and just makes random decisions, but usually it's in consultation with team members.
Chloe and I have absolutely loved chatting with our guests this season. As you can see from this episode, there's been such a broad range, so much learning, so many interesting people, so many interesting stories. It was impossible to include all of our learnings, but I hope you've enjoyed what we've had. We're extremely grateful to everyone that's joined us on the podcast so far this season. If you've got any ideas or suggestions for guests that we might have later on in the year or even next year, please do let us know. We'd love to hear your thoughts on the Beautiful Business podcast, what you'd love, what you'd like to see more of. So please do drop us a message and the link's in the show notes.
Thank you for listening to the Beautiful Business podcast. If you've enjoyed this episode, then please remember to subscribe and leave us a review. For more advice and practical tips on what it's really like to build a beautiful business, visit our content hub at wowco.uk/hub or check out the link in the show notes.